everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to another episode of Screen Heroes. I am Derek, one of your weekly hosts.
You are Derek.
I am.
You are.
I've got my other two weekly hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
I'm a unicorn.
You are a unicorn. I see that. For those of you who are not watching and are listening to this podcast.
We're sorry for your eardrums.
And then we have our, now I guess a regular guest on the show.
This is what, my third, fourth time?
How many times do they have to be on before we start paying them?
I mean, how many times do I have to be on before?
Well, I think it's like 80. Is it 90 or is that?
Triple digits.
Gotcha. Triple digits, yeah. Triple.
But Robert's back.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tonight we're going to be here. Today we're going to be talking about the best fantasy movies and franchises, live action, right?
We're combining franchises, and we left off animation because we felt like we could do a whole other episode just on animation alone.
So yeah, so movies that might have made the list, like, you know, for example, Ferngully is just not in the running for this stuff.
But easily could be in our top fantasy animated
films. You could
films.
Just pick Avatar if you wanted to do that.
No,
that's
I'm going to hit
you. I'm going to rule that as sci-fi.
I mean, they're basically the same thing.
I know, but still.
Ferngully was like 20 years earlier, but yeah. Hey, you know, whatever. So what you mean when you say we're combining franchises, that means that anything that has multiple films
will take
up...
If you pick the Harry Potter, then just lump it all together.
Okay.
Because you can say which one was your favorite out of that or which one you think is the best, but let's not spend an entire podcast dedicated to how the 8 Harry Potter films take up, you know, 8 spots on the top 20.
See, I mistook that and I left off franchises completely.
That's fair.
So...
I don't think I have any
franchises on mine either.
I do.
Because I knew somebody else would hit the big franchise.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Well, I've got a list of 10 different things, so I got some backups and stuff.
Did we have any news happen this week?
Yeah, I think we did have some pieces of news. One thing happened just like a couple hours ago. The two directors of the Han Solo film have stepped away from the project together, citing creative differences with the production company, which in this case would be Disney.
You don't talk back to the House of Mouse.
Edgar Wright left, which is exactly what these two guys have done.
So do you think that they're leaving, or do you think they're being fired?
No, I think they're leaving.
Okay, that's fair.
Because it's happened before with Disney stuff now, because of Ant-Man, I can totally understand where Edgar Wright at least was coming from, where you're so boxed in because of all the rules you have to follow,
right,
that it's hard to bring your creative sense to it and not break those rules. And so in this case, they cited creative differences. So maybe it was a tone thing, maybe it was particular plot points, I don't know.
Maybe Disney wants to make it a trilogy and they just wanted to do a single movie like Rogue One.
Always possible, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that Rogue 2 Electric Boogaloo was going to be confirmed so quickly after the movie was successful.
Right. It's a little interesting because at first when I read it, I thought they were stepping away from the project because the two of them had creative differences. Because, I mean, it's hard to direct the film by yourself, let alone with another person. I imagine that's... You know.
I mean, that's why you usually only see co-directors that are... brothers or sisters in the case of the Wachowskis, or, you know, husband wife. And really, like, the last husband wife duo I've seen were the composers for Frozen. So it's not even a director thing. Most people don't do co-directors because of clashing.
Yeah. So that's what my first thought was it must be that the two of them were having some trouble, but that's not what the article said. So, you know, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Any additional thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I'm eager to see who's going to take their place. Obviously, this movie's not slowing down.
No, they're already like halfway through production. So.
Right.
That worries me a bit more, though, because when you watch Ant-Man, you can kind of tell where the Edgar Wright stuff stops.
And where Peyton Reed starts. So,
but did that make it a worse movie for you?
Not for me. No. But we don't know how that'll impact the Han Solo film. And depending on who they get, it could be, you know, drastic style differences. So
it's possible.
Very well could.
We'll see.
That was one big thing. There was a second.
There was a big internet witch hunt controversy over Gal Gadot's
Gadot's
pay for
Absolutely.
Wonder Woman, which is kind of silly in my opinion because it's not really a big deal. Listen, she got paid $300,000, right? That was
she
the
did.
Big news. So a lot of actors, including Chris Evans with the first Captain America movie, who made the exact same amount, have a clause in their contract that gives them a large amount of money after the movie finishes its theatrical run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That nets them millions of dollars generally. And this is not going to be any different than that. We don't need to get enraged that Henry Cavill made $14 million because that was after the theatrical run happened for Man of Steel.
And so, this is not this is also not a new concept. The man who actually kind of made this idea famous was Jack Nicholson for the Joker in Batman. He asked for a very low salary for what he normally would have been paid for a percentage of the back end. And
he made a lot of money. A
ton of money.
He's probably still making money off of it.
Yeah, probably. There was at least one point where that became the highest grossing individual role of all time because of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still true because Robert Downey Jr. is making $50 million a movie now. But yeah, I mean, you have to take the whole thing into context. And
there's a lot of people that have done that. Cameron Diaz created a deal where she took a very small cut up front to do a movie, and she ended up making millions off of it afterwards somehow. I don't remember which film it is. It was one of her smaller budget ones, one of like during her indie phase, and she just got rich off of it pretty much because of the production. Like, she signed on to do so many different parts in the film that
it's
all equaled out. So
it helps because then you're not, that person is not taking a huge chunk out of the production budget.
And this is also none of her money for merchandising for likeness rights on any of the dolls or toys or backpacks that she's on. So
I imagine WB owns the likeness rights, and so she probably doesn't get really much for that.
Not much, but I'm sure she gets something.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure that's all factored into whatever she gets off of the...
And let's not forget that this is not the age of single one-shot films. She knows that she's taking that $300,000 plus the back end, and she's going to be in Justice League, and will probably be getting a sequel, and, you know...
And a Justice League 2, probably, at some point.
Yeah. She's going to show up a few more times. So it's the same deal with the MCU guys. It's the long play.
Yeah.
You know that you're in this for X number of years, and you're looking at that total.
Yep.
So...
Put down your pitchforks, get over it. She's going to make money. She's,
she's going to make a ton. She's
going to make it. It's going to happen, so...
Gal's not starving for... anything right now. And she's doing great.
Given how well the movie's been received, Warner Brothers does not want her in a bad mood.
So keep in mind that before Wonder Woman came out and BVS, what movie was she most famous for?
A very small role
in Fast and Furious. She wasn't Ben Affleck going into this. She was
and she wasn't
virtually a no-name actress.
Mm-hmm. And Robert Downey Jr. didn't make $50 million a movie in the first Iron Man.
And he was an established actor, obviously.
That was also his comeback film. But, and Jon Favreau has said that they worked for relative, of course, peanuts on the film because it was like the biggest budget indie film ever. That was Marvel Studios' first film, and they were writing the script as they were filming, so
they basically had to put their building up as collateral to make the film. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of money there, right? So you have to start somewhere, and I think Gal understands that, or she wouldn't have signed on.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
All right.
Anything else in the news?
I don't think so.
That's the big stuff. Yeah. Batman fans would be excited to know that Mask of the Phantasm is getting a full HD restoration for Blu-ray.
And I think this year was, 25 years since Batman Returns? Or this this week was?
Yeah.
I think Thursday? I don't know. Sometime in the last few days.
So that's pretty exciting, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Leave Carrie Fisher alone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, please. Right. That was this week.
Not your problem.
I mean, if you're just now finding out that she had some personal issues with drugs and you didn't know her background that well anyway, so I'm not sure why you're enraged, but...
Yeah.
I mean
she was doing coke when she was filming Return of the Jedi. That was a long time ago. She's always struggled with that, and it's sad, but it's not angering.
At this point, we need to be more concerned with the Skye's vendetta against Harrison Ford. That man's been through enough plane crashes. Like, let's focus on that.
Maybe he shouldn't be flying anymore. I'm just going to throw that out there. But let's move on to our main topic.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's.
Fantasy films.
Who wants to kick us off?
All right. So I'm going to go with something that's relatively newer. It's smaller than all of this, and it did huge in Britain, but not so much here. And that is Stardust.
Mm.
Fantastic film.
It's a great movie.
Based on the Neil Gaiman book of the exact same name. This is one of the rare occasions where I believe the movie's better than the book, because Robert De Niro's part was only a page long, and his part is, in my opinion, completely integral to the story of the film. So I like that it got expanded. I like that he actually got a name in this.
It's a very fun part of the movie.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's a great part.
I mean, it has witches, it has a unicorn, it has a star falling from the sky and becoming a woman. Like, it's absolutely incredible. It's just a fun movie. I'm sad we never got a sequel, but at the same time, thankfully we didn't, because now Charlie Cox is our Daredevil.
I'm not sure it needed one.
I'm not sure it did either. There was no
consolidated story.
It really kind of finished up the story at the end. Right. They just said what happened, and it was good.
I think it's very well made. Matthew Vaughn has gone on to do quite a lot of cool things, like Kingsman, and this opened the door for it. I would put it in my top 20 for sure, which is why I'm mentioning it first, because I feel like it's on the lower end of that, but it's incredibly well made and fun to watch, so...
That did not make my list, but it's a very good movie.
Good choice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Robert, how about you?
Well, I do like Stardust, and I did consider putting that on my list, but I'm going to go with Willow for my first movie.
I'm really glad somebody
totally
did.
Forgot that.
What is wrong
I know.
With you?
I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
Why are you
dating
this guy?
I just forgot.
It's a childhood favorite. I grew up loving the movie. It's got magic and adventure and armies. It's great. It was one of the earliest movies that got me into fantasy.
I agree.
Yeah. I haven't thought about Willow in years.
Val Kilmer?
Yeah, definitely young Val Kilmer. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would actually watch a sequel to that now, because I still want to see Warwick Davis be like an adopted dad, because that was a fun part.
Well,
like,
I mean, he did great in that movie. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of roles for people of his stature.
Absolutely.
In movies, and I thought he did really well considering the circumstance and everything else. And Val Kilmer was great, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Mardigan, I think, is who we play in that movie, right?
Yeah.
He was charming in a really terrible way, and just, you know, right. He had the Val Kilmer thing going. And yeah, I mean, everything about that movie worked. It's definitely not my top five, but it's a good, solid movie. Very enjoyable.
It's not often that the handsome lead actor... isn't the lead, he's a sidekick.
Yeah, so you had the handsome guy as a sidekick, and you had a little guy as the main character. So,
right.
I mean, it kind of like, you know, in Lord of the Rings, where you've got hobbits, mm-hmm. you know, as lead characters in parts. Now, you've got a little guy who is just learning how to use magic.
That might be, no, it's probably my second favorite Val Kilmer role.
The Saint.
Yeah.
The Doors.
Yeah.
The Doors.
Real Genius.
Real Genius, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. That was a great one. I love that.
I very much love that movie.
Fair enough.
We're not talking about Real
Genius.
No,
this
not.
Is not the Val Kilmer episode.
No.
Well,
that's coming up, though.
Episode 100. No, I'm totally kidding. That's not happening. not episode
Ryan.
100.
Never say never.
What you got
for
us?
Oh, what? Well,
yeah, you're up.
So I want to preface this by saying I left off a bunch of my big movies that I love that we've talked about on the show before. I'll throw those in if you guys pull out movies that are in my current top five.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to put my number five as Army of Darkness. You wouldn't think about it going in that it's a fantasy movie.
No, it
movie,
totally
but
is.
It's all the criteria. It's not my favorite of the Evil Dead franchise, but it is really hilarious.
It
and
is
it's
the
a
only
lot
one that's like
favorites.
Fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. It's you know, it's got the time travel and
you get Bruce Campbell at his peak after everybody's already like, we love it. We love this guy, you know,
right.
And he's, you know, yeah, charming and ridiculous in every way. And
I love Army of Darkness.
Yeah,
it's my second favorite movie of the franchise. Behind Evil Dead 2.
That's my same ranking. So.
Yeah, but it's so much fun. And I mean, the stop motion when he's fighting Evil Ash, but he's just like the skeleton at the end. And it's wonderful.
So it is part of a franchise.
I mean, technically. Well, we're allowed to talk about it.
Yeah,
we're,
but
so
it's
we're,
really the
we're
only,
not allowed to. Yeah,
I know, it's way different than the other two.
That's the thing. It's the only one of the franchise that really fits into fantasy.
And we
right?
never
valid,
said no franchises.
No,
so.
I've got
we
franchises.
We just said to lump them together.
But it is a kind of a unique situation because it's the only franchise I can think of where the movie styles are different within it, so it doesn't...
Directed by the same guy.
Do you guys feel like the late 80s and early 90s, they took more visual chances cinematically?
Sam Raimi always took
For sure.
You can make that argument.
Those kind of movies. Like, we just talked about how unique Willow was, and that Val Kilmer wasn't the main character, and his character easily could have been, and nowadays probably would.
I think it's because back then... The most important thing for making a movie wasn't to get a sequel greenlit immediately.
Yeah, it wasn't to get a whole universe started. Yeah,
that wasn't the goal. Like, if you don't get today, if your sequel isn't greenlit in the first, like, 2 weeks, people are, like, wondering what's going on, right? Yeah. And back then, that was never really the case. Now, obviously, Evil Dead has a lot of sequels and spin-off type things, so... You know, but that took a lot of time and a lot of Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell's own personal money and resources to do it. Willow, right. I don't think anybody ever made Willow with the intention of building more. So you can take those chances, because if they're not well received, you did what you sought out to do.
Absolutely.
Versus playing it safe because you want to get the sequel. So
fair enough. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, so for me then, in that case, I'm going to get one of my personal favorites out of the way, and that is The Neverending Story.
Yes.
Love it.
I'm mainly talking about the first one. I know that there are two more, and I know that Jack Black is in the third one. Was there a fourth one?
Yeah, I never saw it. Yeah.
I didn't know there was a fourth one. Jack Black's in the third one.
And the kid from Free Willy played Bastion in the second, and that's the only reason why I watched it, because he was in Free Willy.
I watched it because I loved the first one. I'm like, well, this is great. There's another one. And immediately regretted my decision. The second one wasn't
totally atrocious.
Right.
But the third one was, but then it just, yeah, the third one was bad.
Yeah. I love The Neverending Story. I love everything about it. I love the set design. I love the characters. You know, the giant rock guy, the rock eater, and...
Rock biter.
Rock biter. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's a very emotional movie.
The Swamp of Sadness.
Yeah, that was that scene ruined kids' childhood.
That was
the horse.
No, I
but then you got the turtle. That was awesome, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it wasn't
turtle's a jerk.
I'm talking design-wise as a kid. I was like, this design is really cool.
Visually,
I agree.
Yeah.
Another visually chancing movie at times.
Crazy. I mean, the risks that they took. The fact that the antagonist is literally nothing.
Yeah.
You know, the absence of existing is the main antagonist is really cool.
A little deep for kids. I didn't really pick that up as a kid. I thought it was like a physical thing.
I mean, I don't really remember when. I watched that movie as long as I can remember, so I don't know at what point I understood it. I've been watching. I mean, we went to go see it when they showed it in theaters recently.
That was so cool.
Which was great. To see that on the big screen for the first time as an adult was really, really
that
exciting.
That would have been awesome. Sounds like that where I just want to rent out a movie theater for just myself, because I feel like other people always ruin the movie for
me.
Absolutely. Well, on vintage, like classic movies like that,
It was at an AMC, so everyone was very quiet, and there wasn't like any quote-along stuff or
anything
like
that. They
did
not preface that there was going to be a documentary about the making of beforehand, and people did get a little restless.
Well, because I think I got nervous, because I thought, was it not the movie that we were seeing? We were just seeing a documentary about the movie, which... I'm not sure it would have been a bad thing, but I was ready to watch the movie.
Absolutely. But along with the Swamp of Sadness, a part that got me as an adult was when, you know, the childlike empress looks right at the camera and she's talking to Bastion, but it feels like she's talking to you about saving them. And it's like she is just in your soul. That little girl is such a great actress.
Yeah, she did a fantastic job. It's a beautiful
movie. All
three
of the kids did. They really did.
Yeah.
They were great.
Very different people, very different characters. But even
Falcor, come on.
Well, oh, man. Falcor.
Who didn't want a luck dragon?
One of the greatest dragons in fantasy movies.
And one of the greatest names. I mean, there's a million dogs out there named Falcor because of that movie.
Absolutely.
The end where, you know, he comes back with Falcor to chase the bullies down the street.
So
is
good.
Like,
that was awesome.
I mean, for anybody who'd ever been bullied, I'm sure, like, that's like... And you've always wanted to do that, you know?
Well, for me, Falcor is something that I want to see realized. Like, we go to conventions all the time, and there's AT-ATs, and there's Jabbas, and there's Toothless. I don't care. I want a Falcor.
There was a guy
build a Falcor.
I don't remember his name off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure his first name was Ryan, and it's a cosplay page, Ryan something.
Yeah.
Cosplay, but yeah, he did a Skeksis. He did a Falcor. He's done a lot of cool things.
Really I actually know somebody who has talked about building a Falcor. He just doesn't have space to store.
That's fair. They're huge.
I mean, it would be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you wanted to do it on a small scale, it'd still have to be 6 to 8 feet on the small end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, even like Toothless that we see go around, that's a lot of storage space.
Absolutely.
That
guy. I don't even think that would fit in my garage.
No.
You know. But yeah, so the NeverEnding Story, the first one. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies ever. So.
Right. It's my turn.
Yeah, you're up.
All right. So this is a movie that I've come to appreciate the older I got. I thought it was a little boring as a kid, but the more I watch it as an adult, the more I love it. And that's Mary Poppins. I kept a lot of Disney movies off of my list because it's really easy when you go to fantasy to just tap Disney. They're the fantasy king, I guess you could call it. But Mary Poppins is so unique. And I feel like that's just because of the charm of Julie Andrews. And it's not just constant in-your-face fantasy. It's wonderful scene after line after line. Like, she just delivers and makes it beautiful and fun and energetic. And I wish there had been an adult in my life when I was a kid that just randomly burst into song and made things less British and dismal. Like,
fair enough. I mean, it's a very good movie. Technically, it was really difficult to pull off at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Still kind of impressive given their constraints. I mean, they're remaking it now, of course.
Right?
Well, is it a remake?
No, it's a sequel.
It's a sequel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because guess who was coming back to be in the movie? Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's Mary Poppins, she has an age, but, you know, he does.
Well, that's cool.
And he was actually one of my favorite character in the movie.
I always loved him in pretty much anything I saw him in, so,
Mary Poppins.
No, that's a good one. I didn't really think about the Disney movies. I don't think anything on my list is from Disney, actually.
Wow.
Not
like directly
Disney. I've got a lot of alternates, so that was one of my alternates.
Oh, cool. Good.
So,
okay. Well, what's next on your list then, Robert?
What's next on my list? Let's see. I think I'm going to go off the wall, kind of, you know, a little bit more off the wall, kind of like Mary Poppins. I'm going to go with an old childhood favorite, Harvey. Now, if you've never seen it.
I've never seen Harvey.
It's a Jimmy Stewart movie.
Okay.
And his best friend is a puka.
Oh, that's adorable.
Who is a giant rabbit that only he can see until the very end.
I remember seeing
like Donnie Darko, that movie.
I remember seeing the box for the movie at Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Every time we'd go in there, and I was always curious what it was as a kid, and just never rented it.
It's a feel-good movie, because Jimmy Stewart just plays this happy-go-lucky guy. He just loves meeting people and making friends, but everybody thinks he's insane, because he has this giant friend that nobody can see throughout the entire movie, and they try to admit him to Psycho Ward. And he's just like, it's nice to meet you. And he's just friendly with the doctors, and they're all treating him like a psycho. But it's a good movie. If you've never seen it, then it's an old black and white movie. But Jimmy Stewart, one of the great actors in cinema history. So.
And that plot line has been borrowed multiple times since then. I mean, heck, even Sesame Street did it. Snuffleupagus was Big Bird's imaginary friend for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same.
And they do kind of explain in the movie, but if you don't know what a puka is, it's a being from Celtic mythology.
Oh, cool.
And they're very mischievous. So.
Ryan.
All right, Ryan.
I too am going with something that's not a traditional fantasy movie, but I think still qualifies. Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, that was on my list.
Yeah, that definitely qualifies.
Absolutely. That was an alternate. Nice. So, I mean, it's Tim Burton for me at his best. It's everything visual in it is telling a story, even if it's just a background shot or the way a house is designed. Vincent Price was amazing. That was really good for me as a kid because my dad's favorite actor in his whole life was Vincent Price, mm-hmm. And he was kind of on the edge of his career when I was a kid. So, yeah, I think that was his last role. Maybe there was one movie after that. But
it was definitely towards the end.
He was the perfect actor for that role, and I mean, he started off the movie in a wonderful way. And seeing that machine that like stamps out the pieces, and it was just so fantastical. And the story is just beautiful. Everything about the movie is beautiful. I could watch it every day for the rest of my life and not be sad. I mean, it's a great movie.
They actually adapted it into a ballet, and I don't know how long it ran. I don't know if it's still running, but as soon as I saw that, I was like, I bet that snow scene is beautiful on stage. I want to see it because of that scene. That scene is one of the most beautifully filmed scenes I think I've ever seen, at least in one of my top 10 favorite scenes. It's gorgeous.
It's definitely Tim Burton at, like, that's his heyday.
Mm-hmm. It's,
you know.
It was his peak for me, but.
It's Johnny.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you know, because between Edward Scissorhands and Batman, and I mean.
Beetlejuice. Like, right around there was good Tim Burton. Tim Burton does best when it's out of his own head and not an adaptation, in my opinion.
I would agree with you 100% on that, actually. I mean, he can do good work. But
Batman, I still think his two Batman movies are amazing. Yeah,
all right. I was more going with like Alice in Wonderland and Dark Shadows and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory look like cash grabs to me.
I think he's kind of stuck in that. I think back when he did the Batman movies and Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, that was when he had all of his ideas and he put all of his energy into them and they came out wonderful.
Yeah,
and now he's. Like, he has that style. You can pick it out. You can see a movie and know it's a Tim Burton movie. Oh, yeah. You know? And I think he just kind of sticks with that. So.
No, that was on my list, too. I love that film.
I'm glad I stole it from you.
Well, so in that vein, the next one on my list is Beetlejuice.
Oh. Okay. Yeah,
I thought that went a little too horror for me to be considered.
It's still fantasy, though.
I wouldn't classify it as true horror.
I think it's as much fantasy as Army of Darkness is.
Yeah. I mean, Army of Darkness had knights in shining armor and skeletons and swords and time travel and, you know, just saying, I think Beetlejuice might not be as much fantasy as Army of Darkness.
I guess Beetlejuice never scared me, so I never really thought of it as horror, you know?
Okay. Well, I mean, it's more like horror comedy, I guess, but I mean, if there's fantasy elements, sure, so we'll let it pass.
We'll let it pass. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting it pass, right?
Okay, it's one of my favorite movies. So.
So Beetlejuice... For a lot of the same reasons we were saying for Edward Scissorhands, it's just a really uniquely visual movie. Michael Keaton, that's honestly my favorite Michael Keaton role. I know he was an amazing Batman, but if like I only got one of them, I'd pick his Beetlejuice.
And it's one of those things where he's the titular character. You remember his performance the best out of everybody's, even though everyone around him is solid acting.
Oh, yeah.
But he's only on screen for a total of 13 minutes.
But it's iconic.
Exactly.
But it's a lot of fun, you know, when the stretching their faces and the giant sandworm and just, it's so outlandish. And
a really fun spinoff cartoon came of it.
I did love the
cartoon. It was a fun cartoon. Yeah. I remember that.
I did love the cartoon. And all the Burger King toys. Ryan's rolling his
eyes.
Every
cartoon had Burger King toys around that time, so.
Mm. All right, so we're back around to you, Ray.
All right, so it's Tim Burton adjacent Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay, that was
An alternative.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh my God, how can you not love this movie? It's got comedy and horror, and Gene Wilder is... absolutely brilliant from top to bottom, start to finish, you know. And the fantasy is, it, like, the colors appear fantastical and the actions that everybody's taking appear fantastical. But deep down, it's a kind of a scary film, a lot of, like, creepy undertones and...
Well, the book was that way, too. Absolutely. Even more so, but yeah, it definitely came through.
After...
That tunnel ride that they do.
Absolutely. But I guess after Roald Dahl passed away, his kids found more chapters that he had cut out of the book because his publisher said they were too scary. It was, like... child number 6 and 7 who died Like, they, he just flat out said that they had been killed in their accidents. And so we never got to meet Child 6 and 7 in this adventure, but he had some darker plans.
I assumed other than Charlie, all the other kids died.
I did too, until Charlie and the Chocolate Factory came out and they showed them all warped and distorted.
Which was kind of funny, actually.
Absolutely.
I'm not a huge fan of the remake.
You don't have to be.
And it's, I'm not even sure that it's that what the problem is specifically. I think maybe it was too weird.
No.
I think it was Johnny Depp.
Think it was Johnny Depp? I don't know. It's hard to say.
I think they made it too
soft. Tim Burton-y?
No. It was too soft. The horror overtones, the scary reasons, like, I want to hug Willy Wonka, but I also want to stay as far away from him as possible.
But I think Gene Wilder captured that more than Johnny Depp did. Right. Like Johnny Depp, he seemed like he was trying too hard to be weird and like creepy, whereas Gene Wilder didn't really have to try. It was like he just naturally exuded this in that character. So,
and also it was a fun musical. Like, musical is not the first thing I think of when I think of that movie.
Yeah, I guess you're
but
right.
But it had some wonderful songs in it, they stick in your head. I'm still waiting for a death metal version of I Want It Now.
It might be out there.
No, but, yeah, and Veruca Salt was in a rock band, wasn't she?
So. No, Veruca Salt is a rock band.
Well, the lead singer was Veruca Salt from the movie, I'm pretty sure.
We'll look that up here later.
And fact check real quick.
You can always listen to First Jason, the kid who plays the Jason who jumps out of the lake at the end of the first Friday the 13th, had a band called First Jason.
That's funny.
There you go. Nice.
Sorry, Robert.
But, no, it's okay. But I'm sorry. And also, as a kid, who didn't want to go walking around in that Candyland?
So cool.
Right?
I wanted to eat like half of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would have been pretty neat.
And you would have been child number 6.
Definitely my something.
Second favorite Gene Wilder role is Willy Wonka. So
it's pretty up there. I don't know. I mean, he's done a lot of good
first
movies.
One's, Young Saddles. Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
Is it really?
Yeah. I love Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles is an amazing movie.
I didn't guess that you would have loved it that much.
But it doesn't showcase him as much in Blazing Saddles because he's really the sidekick.
When you're
Look, like, if you're out there listening and you don't like Young Frankenstein, we have to have a long
Please
talk.
Stop listening to our
podcast. We don't. We're just not friends. We're going to cut you off.
So real quick in chat, Jordan is saying The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which is a really crazy movie.
It's a really overhyped movie since Heath Ledger died halfway through it or whatever and they had to replace him. I don't think it was that good.
Their resolution was very unique, though. I do appreciate
Terry Gilliam is one of the most creative directors out there. I'm excited for his upcoming film, but Time Bandits is 10 times better.
Okay. Well, for those who don't know, because Heath Ledger died during filming, what they basically did was they replaced him with like two or three other actors. Three,
Jude Law, Johnny Depp, and Colin Farrell, and they all portrayed him in a different, like, world-esque kind of place. It was a unique solution to a very serious and tragic problem.
Interesting.
All right, Robert, what's next on your list?
Next on my list, I am going to go with another childhood favorite, Krull.
Oh man, Krull.
Okay. I've never seen it.
I mean, it's another kind of cheesy 80s fantasy sci-fi movie. It's awesome. It's got aliens, it's got knights, it's got one man on an adventure banding together rogue elements in the world just to so they can save the kingdom and his true love. It's a fantasy movie, just a slightly different twist.
That's fair. So. We've had a few with twists.
So yeah,
yeah. That's just what I've never seen, unfortunately. So
it's, I enjoy it. I mean, you've got flying horses, cyclops.
That's cool.
You know, magicians, aliens. I mean, it's crazy.
Fair enough. I might want to watch that then. So.
Sure.
I highly recommend it. And it's older, so it's got some really good visuals for the time.
Yeah,
it's pretty well done. There is, can be argued, some overacting, but, you know, that was for the time.
Right, yeah. I like those older movies. I mean, while I appreciate technically what we can accomplish today, yeah, if you could do it in the 70s or the 80s, it's even that much more impressive. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ryan.
I'm going to go back to the more pure fantasy. I'm going to go to possibly the most pure fantasy movie that that any of us would have on our list, and that is The Princess Bride.
When you
think of fantasy for me, I mean, it has it ticks nearly every box for me. You know, it's a fairy tale being told to a child. I mean, it's just everything about it is wonderful. All the acting is great. One of those lightning in a bottle movies where everything worked and is still relevant today. The messages that it has and everything about it is.
And Princess Buttercup ends up leading an army of Amazons.
Yeah. That's true.
I like to think they're in the same universe.
I'm cool with that.
Right after Dreadpirate Roberts is killed, she goes to the island.
One of the most quotable movies.
For
the general public.
Inconceivable.
Which says something, though. When pretty much anybody you bump into can quote something from that movie that says something about it. It's really wonderful across the board. The cast, I think, is what sells it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, just a wonderful cast.
And we're all just a little, like, too young. We missed it in theaters.
Yep.
So probably, like... I don't know about you guys, but my first viewing was catching it on, like, a Saturday morning on TBS, and I just remember, like, the entire time laughing and enjoying every bit of it, and
I was in college the first time I saw it.
Get out of here! You're fired! Whoa.
Seriously.
Wow.
Fired.
First time.
I think we could fire him. He kind of runs the whole thing.
But
we can replace him with Robert.
But here's the thing, though. This is how you know that it's not nostalgia glasses, though. I didn't see it until I was like 19 or 20,
it's not nostalgia glasses because it's an amazing movie.
No matter what. It's nice to have kind of that...
verification? Whatever. The Giant? Come on.
Has Rob Reiner done anything as magical, like, or as wonderful? I can't think so. I mean, you can't really put this up against When Harry Met Sally. Like, who cares?
You can.
Too blave. My point is just that I saw it as an adult well after it had come out, and it was
still
wonderful. Yeah, it's still an absolutely wonderful movie that I still watch all the time and have owned several different copies of. So, you know, even picked up the book, though I actually prefer the movies. All right, so I guess I'm up next.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to go with one that I still think is pure fantasy for Ryan's sake, and that is The Dark Crystal.
Thank goodness somebody said it. I was getting nervous.
I was waiting. I was somebody waiting was for somebody say to say it. That's why I haven't yet.
Yeah. It's a creepy freaking movie.
It really is.
Absolutely.
Especially for young kids. I mean, I was watching that movie at like the age of 3 and 4, and it's a creepy freaking movie.
It really is.
But again, kind of like The Neverending Story, it's very unique from a visual perspective. It's very beautiful. It's a Henson production.
So what happens when you give Jim Henson creative freedom and let him create a world?
Absolutely.
And everything else, yeah.
Because first you're going to get the quality of the Henson movie, right, which I think is incredibly important, aside from the style itself. And then, yeah, him personally at the time, got to design some pretty amazing creatures and concepts.
It was a fleshed out world.
Yeah,
that's the crazy thing that a lot of things are missing nowadays. You know, when you think fantasy, you want to see a fleshed out world where you want to know the story of that creature over there that's on screen.
Absolutely.
You know, Fizgig. Do I want to know Fizgig? Yeah, of course we want to know. I would watch a whole movie about Fizgig. Give it to Pixar, and I'll watch that. Like, you know, even if it's not Henson Company doing it. Like, there's every character in that movie has a story.
And a lot of it has been
fleshed
out a bit. Like, there's been Dark Crystal comic books and Dark Crystal children's books. So
mostly focused on the Skeksis for whatever reason.
Which is so crazy.
I think that was easy because there were a lot of them, you know, and it was easy.
And the fact that they're...
I mean, compared to everything else
they were based
in the movie,
off of the Seven Deadly Sins made them a really good villain, too, you know.
Yeah,
I kind of want to know more about what the Mystics were doing. You don't see them doing much at all.
Yeah.
Now, we are lucky we are getting a prequel series on Netflix that the Henson Company is involved in.
I'm excited to see more than 2 Gelflings.
You know? Yeah, definitely.
I'm not. I think the Gelflings were the worst part of the movie.
you would say that.
Give me an Aghra origin story. That's what I want.
But that's the thing, that you wouldn't even have seen Aghra if it weren't for them.
Well, that's fine. I don't want another Gelfling. They got their story. Give me an Aghra story.
Okay.
Aghra was the best character in that movie for me.
You want to find out how she lost her eye?
Why does she have nipples? This is a puppet. She doesn't need nipples. That was horrifying as a child, but as an adult, I appreciate the attention to detail.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So everyone now knows what interests Ryan.
Not, I mean, it doesn't Muppet really nipples. Interest me, but so actually, the Skeksi have like 8 nipples, even though they're portrayed as birds,
yeah,
which wouldn't have nipples. Yeah, like they have a whole undercarriage. You have to buy the action figure to really know that.
Now that you're an adult, how do you feel about, you know, the mainline Muppets not having nipples?
You know, I'm okay with not knowing whether they have nipples or not, because a lot of them, you don't really like. A lot of them have some sort of something.
I mean, Kermit's totally naked.
Kermit's totally naked, yeah.
90%
frogs don't
of the
have
time.
Nipples, so I think it's okay.
Neither do birds, but...
They don't. But that was, they don't exist in the same universe. It's all birds in Darkness.
It's all Henson's.
They just look like birds.
Fun fact, in Muppet's Wizard of Oz, when nobody was watching, they gave Gonzo Tin Man nipples, and they said it out loud. Kermit was asking what all the doodads on him... do, and he touches one, and Gonzo's like, "That's just my nipple." And I was in college at the time, and I was like, "What?"
Well, I've never seen that, so that's going on the list right now.
Now we know what Derek's interests are.
That's ridiculous.
Gonzo nipples.
Gonzo nipples.
All right. Gonzo was always my favorite of the Muppets.
Did you see Muppets from Space? Because it's so good.
Oh, that's up there with my favorite
so
Muppet
good.
Movies.
I love
so
the Muppets.
Good.
Jordan from chat said that Jumanji should be on our list, and
I mean, it's a fantasy movie, but it wouldn't be in my top.
I really love Jumanji. I feel like their CGI and practical effects weren't quite up there, but the 4 actors did phenomenal, and I'm really scared that this, like, remake or reboot...
It's a sequel.
It's going to have the CGI that these guys didn't, but there's no way it can have the same heart.
Before Baywatch, I would have said The Rock will get people in seats, but that's not a guarantee anymore.
I mean, here's the thing.
I really feel like it's Zac Efron and Taints, though, that did that one in. Go ahead.
It's probably Zac Efron. Like, I love The Rock, but having it be that buddy movie with Zac, I just am not that interested. But anyway, I think that whenever you want to do a sequel or a remake of a movie where Robin Williams... was the lead or a prominent role, you're going to have a hard time.
Right. Yeah.
And that's going to miss that because this is going to have, it's going to be an action movie. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be an action adventure movie that of course is set in this fantasy context, but that's not what the original one was. The original one was regular people who were put in a ridiculous situation and you were given one of the best actors of our lifetimes.
I mean, the same gentleman also wrote the book, Zathura, and when they made that film, they cast Josh Hutcherson when he was like 10, Kristen Stewart, and Dax Shepard. And, you know, at the time, they were all bigger stars. They all had some weight to those little names. And it didn't come close to having the same amount of effect or love that went into Jumanji. So Jumanji is a fantastic film. And I don't think they're going to do it justice.
Yeah. But... I love the original. It was a fun movie.
It's a good movie.
I always wanted like a really solid quality version of that game, which they
never made.
No, it's been made, just not officially. But I know I've seen them for sale, and if I knew you wanted one, I would have kept my eyes open more for you.
Well, now you can.
Now I can, but you won't be able to buy it, so...
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway.
Funny how money just magically shows up when something like that is...
Well, I got a new job, so... All right, so Ray, your number 4 pick.
Oh my gosh.
All right, number 4.
All right. So.
Just hit one of the big ones. We're going to have to do them anyway.
Let's talk about Harry Potter then. I think Harry Potter is one of those things where the world is more important than the individual stories.
Agreed.
I feel like each movie let down the books. The books were 10 times better than the films. But as a whole... Harry Potter films are incredibly fun. They have a real sense of tragedy and loss to them, and yet still keep this bright little gleaming bit of hope. And Fantastic Beasts has continued that, so it works better all together. I feel like all of them should be watched together if you can, or at least in a couple different viewings.
Marathon it.
Yeah, it's not as good separated out, but together it did so much for pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that 4, 5, and 6 are probably the best movies of the 8. I think that they weren't quite sure how to live up to the hype of the final book.
I disagree with you on 4, but 5 and 6 are definitely
I like the Goblet of Fire. I think the Goblet of Fire was the first of the Harry Potter movies that really pulled it off.
I think the Goblet of Fire, the book, was the largest book.
Sure.
And should have been split into two movies.
Not disagreeing.
Enough content.
Yeah.
You could have stopped the first one at the Yule Ball. You could have added in all the stuff with the house elves and made their story more important. There's a lot that was left out. So.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I think that none of the movies live up to any of the books.
Right.
So I'm certainly not saying. I've read each book at least 3 times. I love the franchise. So the movies have some really awesome stuff. Visually, they're really stunning. I think the casting is really spot on.
Absolutely.
You know, there are some actors in those roles that now, when I'm reading the book, that's just who I see.
Oh, yeah.
Alan Rickman. Yeah,
of course. Oh, yeah. Of course, Alan Rickman.
Even the woman who played Dolores Umbridge, her face, she's right there.
I still get angry reading or watching that one.
Seeing her makes me angry. Yeah.
But you
liked hating her.
Right. Yeah. Well, that actress was also in Maleficent as one of the fairies, and I was like, she ain't good.
But, I mean, you have to keep in mind that, like, if you put the books aside for a minute, which is hard to do, the 8 Harry Potter movies grossed well over $2 billion.
And now we have two theme parks.
Two theme parks. They're making a whole other trilogy.
I might say. Personal experience going there.
Yeah, you were just there, weren't you?
And I said, worth going, and definitely do the park jumper so you can do them both in one day, and you get to ride the train.
Ooh,
sweet.
There you go.
It's both parks are stellar.
How's the butter beer?
Reminds me of cream soda.
Awesome. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
And they do have actual signature beers there, too. Real
sweet.
Beer. So like a Dragon Scale ale and a Wizard's.
That's cute.
Brew. That's adorable.
They're both like, there's a like a Scottish ale and a stout there.
Why do you look so unhappy, Ryan?
I mean, the movies were fun. I don't really get the obsession, but, you know.
Is it because you're a muggle?
I think we're all muggles because magic doesn't exist.
Oh, it's so sad that you think that.
Okay.
All right.
It's fine, he's supposed to think.
Let's move on.
All right. Yeah. So, Robert.
Me. Okay. So my fourth pick, because I'm still hoping people picking other stuff. I'm going to go with Inkheart.
We're starting to run out now, so it might be time to stay
for
those things.
Inkheart was so much fun.
Yes.
I have no idea what that is.
Inkheart. It's a Brendan Fraser movie.
Fraser.
There is no I, so it's not Fraser.
Team.
What? Fraser.
Stop it.
Fraser.
So... And it's basically it's this book. It's called Inkheart in the movie, and characters from it are come out into the real world. They're brought out, and it's interfering with things. And his family has to.
It's really cute.
That sounds like a fun concept. I don't know how I missed that
because it came out when Brendan Fraser's career was on the downside. You know,
like when he did the Looney Tunes movie.
Absolutely,
yeah.
it was right around after
Bedazzled.
Bedazzled is awesome. I will.
Don't talk to Bedazzled. I actually like that movie too.
What? Shoot. What's the one where he's been locked in the bomb shelter all those years?
Encino Man.
Blast from the Past. Awesome movie as well.
Blast from the Past.
I enjoy pretty much all of Brendan Fraser's movie, and this was one of them. Inkheart. It's actually a good movie. It's a little lesser known to a lot of people, so absolutely. I'm not surprised you haven't seen it. And I just really enjoy it.
It's a fun concept, and I do actually like his stuff. I never saw the Looney Tunes movie, but I liked everything else that I saw.
I enjoyed the Looney Tunes movie that he was in.
You were one of three people, so.
I mean...
It didn't capture the same fun that Space Jam did, even though
Brendan Fraser was a much better
actor than Michael Jordan.
I think that's why it worked, though, because Jordan was just really awkward the entire time.
He was
so
bad.
So, it wasn't Space Jam, but I still found it enjoyable.
Right.
So.
I get it.
But yeah.
So he was also really good on Scrubs.
His two episodes?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He's good on everything he does.
Ryan.
Okay, so one on my list was Dark Crystal, so I'm going to go ahead and...
Do it.
Cut it off, and I'm going to go to another one.
Do it.
I told other hosts before this that I didn't have any comic book movies on my list, but this one isn't actually a comic book movie, so I think it'll work. Mystery Men.
Oh my gosh, dark.
It's not. It's a superhero movie. Well, it's a hero movie.
Yeah.
But it's not a comic book movie.
That's right.
Man. So, yeah, oh, good. Yeah, I guess it's a fantasy movie.
I mean, right? I think it hits all the marks for a fantasy movie, technically. I mean, it's a very, like, fantasy world, fantasy heroes and fantasy, like, all people are trying to live their fantasy by being heroes when they're really just normal dudes.
Let's say, like, none of them really have powers, right?
No, some of them do.
Greg Kinnear does.
Yeah. And he can fly. And the guy that cuts guns with his mind or whatever, right?
He can do that.
It's been a long time since I've seen
it. And the guy that can fart.
Right? Yeah. Come on. The bowling ball.
Yeah.
It can move on its own.
Right? That was a possessed bowling ball. Yeah, the bowler. Right. Yeah, Janine Garofalo. Yeah.
I really loved William H. Macy's role. And the waffle,
you had Dan Cook in there.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh,
it's the only role that I could stand him in.
Oh, and for like 2 seconds.
Eddie Izzard. It's got Eddie Izzard.
Oh, yes. The villains in that movie were really
so good.
Really
so Jeffrey good. Rush.
I loved the theme. Like, you wouldn't think about this, but then you have Frankenstein. What's his name? It's not Disco Frankenstein. Gosh, no. I can't even remember.
Casanova Frankenstein.
Yeah. What a so cool... Good. And they're all, like, disco themed.
And
like,
he has
the whole weapon was, like, his pinky claw. It's so good. And, you know, come on. Invisible Boy? You only can't see him when you're not looking at him? Like,
yeah.
And he has to get completely naked.
Yeah. It's a fun movie. I never thought of it as being fantasy, but you're right. I mean, that's a fun movie.
Yeah, I always wanted very to do a underrated. Captain Amazing or a Mr. Furious costume.
What girl saw that and didn't want to be the bowler? I want to throw a skull bowling ball at people.
That's a really cool prop. You
know how many times my first real legal job was at a bowling alley, and they had...
Before that, he was a prostitute.
I did some hourly stuff under
the
table.
Yeah, we know, a prostitute. Yeah,
not as a prostitute. Anyway, allegedly. Anyway, the bowling alley I worked at actually sold that bowling ball.
Oh.
Why did you not buy it?
Dude, I wanted to so bad. It was $113.
I would pay that right now.
I would pay that right now.
I was 14, making $5.50 an hour. It was always right there in the window, and I told myself that if I ever joined a bowling team, which I always wanted to do, then I would buy the
ball.
What
if you joined a bowling team now?
Right now, yeah.
Then I would probably still go out and get it.
Yes. Yes.
Good call.
I will immediately do a bowler costume.
It was so cool.
She'll propose to you immediately.
You should. It was so cool.
I'd pull off one of them. I don't know who. The shoveler. I can do a shoveler.
Yeah, shoveler.
I've never wanted to hit something with a shovel. I mean, come on. Right? Putting dents in the car.
I picture Derek Moore as Blue Roger.
Yes!
Yes!
Why don't you just throw knives?
Because
it's the Blue Roger.
That's pretty funny.
Oh my god!
All right, so
it would be great.
Yeah, I appreciate. Yeah. So moving on. So this is where things get kind of tough here because I've got two picks left, and I want to make
large franchises that we have.
There are some large franchises. So I'm gonna save one for my number one if nobody hits it. So I'm gonna pick the Indiana Jones franchise.
Yes, I was thinking of them. Hell yeah.
Yeah, Ray and I were talking about it a little bit before the show about whether or not it counted as fantasy, but you've got like an actually biblically accurate Ark of the Covenant. You've got aliens in the one movie that shall not be named.
Well, no, that's part of your list.
It is. It is part of my list.
They weren't aliens. They were other dimensional beings.
Haven't you ever seen that movie, Derek?
Sorry.
I had to do it. Sorry.
I was still trying to work out the refrigerator nuke thing that happened in the beginning of the movie. The Indiana Jones movies, the original one wasn't intended to be a franchise. It was just Raiders of the Lost Ark. And eventually when it was released, they threw Indiana Jones on the title, kind of what they did, you know, with other franchises later. But they're classics. They helped put Harrison Ford on the map with the Star Wars movies, of course, and the first three are wonderfully fun, exciting movies. Sean Connery as his dad in The Last Crusade.
Perfect.
I mean, that's my favorite one, is The Last Crusade. As much as I love Raiders, I personally prefer the third one, even though Raiders is probably the better movie, but they're great, and it's a lot of fun to think that his character does more harm than good in every movie.
Essentially.
Most of them, if you remove him, nothing changes.
I mean, in the first one, they might not even have ever found it. They were digging in the wrong spot.
That's true. But if they did, they would have opened it anyways.
Right.
They would have
died. Yeah, they would have died.
It's fine.
But
it's fine.
Yeah, and there's just some fun little quirks about it. Like, you know, the scene where, Indy just shoots the guy. There was supposed to be a giant fight scene there, but he was, like, deathly ill and couldn't do it. So somebody, I forget who even said it, but it was like, well, just have him shoot him. All right. And that's what ended up happening in the scene. So
I feel like that
one
was
take,
just,
I think it was done, yeah. too.
Harrison Ford being awesome.
Yeah. That was just
his idea to just say the I know line, which is iconic now. So I'm pretty sure that's just him improvising. Now he doesn't do that. He shows up and asks for a paycheck and says,
kill me off.
Does the minimal amount of work. That's it.
It belongs in the museum. Yeah. So, Ray.
All right.
Your last pick.
This has got to be obvious for anybody who knows me. I have to mention this. It goes in my top 10 movies of all time. It's my favorite movie of all time. It's Wizard of Oz.
I didn't even know you liked that movie.
I mean, that's crazy. I don't have insane amounts of memorabilia everywhere. Spend my entire high school career sewing wings onto monkeys.
Obviously a fantasy movie.
Real monkeys.
The hard part was finding the monkeys.
She just went to the zoo.
Yeah. Getting them out of the zoo is the hard part.
Smuggled them in my bra.
Obviously. She's really lucky.
She just did it right there in the monkey zone.
Why are they moving? I don't get it.
Just to freak out the other kids.
Why do they want
Those things scared me when I was a kid. Flying monkeys.
Yeah,
flying boobs specifically.
I guess that's a huge reason why it's my favorite movie too. It helps contribute. Everybody tells me how scared they were of something as a kid, and I never found it scary.
In The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, not one thing.
No.
Even
I
though
say I was like terrified, right. You know, but no, they were creepy.
They're
creepy
very
is a better
creepier.
Term.
I completely agree with that.
I think it's too bright of a movie to be like scary, scary.
Yeah.
I have watched that movie so many times. I can tell you like what time in the film this happens. And I can debunk all those things like the munchkin hanging in the background kind of thing. Like,
that really happened. I know a guy who was there.
I've actually met...
Ryan was that guy.
I've gotten to meet three of the munchkins. I know how much on-screen time Margaret Hamilton had. I know who ended up having multiple injuries. Like, I love that film.
Do you know anything about the munchkin orgies?
Stop it.
Saying.
And then, of course, there's the whole, Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon thing.
Yeah, that's that too.
I actually really enjoyed that. I was being serious.
There are multiple...
You're about to get dumb.
Apparently, I'm not allowed to like that. I don't know.
It's silly. It's totally
cool.
Silly.
Right. Us and Them with the Munchkins was cool.
Whatever.
Okay.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Way to ruin that, Derek.
I know.
I don't think there's been a movie since that has had four different directors and still managed to pull off such a wonderful experience, but everything about it is great, and I could watch it every single day if I had the fortitude.
Fair enough.
So.
The anniversary Blu-ray they put out really restored it quite well. It looks really awesome, so worth getting.
Oh, yeah.
Robert, your last pick.
All right, last pick. So, now, I'm going to do my last pick, but that doesn't diminish because I had to rule out a lot. And I know there might be some viewer or listener wondering when a certain franchise might be said, but I'm going to go with one of the early, early fantasy movies that kind of set a bar, Dragon Slayer.
Interesting.
Okay, deep cuts.
Yeah, it was. It's a really early movie. You might recognize some of the actors, but they're really young. And yeah, it was one of the early, kind of well done dragon movies.
Never saw it.
Yeah,
it's got a really interesting movie. I got like this list now.
I was trying to go off the wall. I'm trying to reintroduce some of these old fantasy movies, and it's got wizards. It's got a wizard in training. It's got dragons, which I mean, putting a dragon on screen was probably unheard
of.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very dark. They kind of had to. Kind of maybe possibly for hiding some of the technology at the time, but it's still a well done movie.
Cool.
So I recommend it for fantasy fans.
Awesome.
Old school.
Now, Ryan, Let's see if you're going to pick the movie I think you're going to pick.
Yeah, I feel like I am. You should.
I mean, so we've missed a couple franchises. Yeah. And guess what? If we only get one more pick after me, we're going to miss franchises because I can think of probably two or three.
Oh, agree. Totally agree.
I've got several more.
But I can't do a top fantasy movie list without mentioning The Labyrinth.
Yeah.
David Bowie, if you live or listen to this show, you know that at least three of the people, I'm not sure about Robert, but three of the people at the table are big David Bowie fans.
Oh, yeah.
Big time. Love you music. Know, you can. There's no one else I can picture as the Goblin King. You got some fantastic Henson characters.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a great classic story. You got David Bowie writing the music, which was all awesome. Everything in that movie is singable. Please don't when we're watching it, but in the car maybe you can do that. And that's okay, but yeah.
But I mean, great. And it shows the quality of again a Henson production. We have three Henson movies on the list between I think.
Oh yeah,
You know,
I think so.
There's a quality level that you expect from a Henson movie, and they got that. You know, Hoggle and you know the little Ludo, worm and Ludo, the of course.
Hello.
You know, like just
the Fire Gang.
It all looks awesome. You know, the door knockers and
Jareth himself.
Well, yeah, sure. Incredible. Yeah. But that was mostly, you know, David, so.
Yeah. I mean, there were certain parts that were definitely David. I'm pretty sure that he wasn't stuffing anything there, just FYI. Go watch The Man Who Fell to Earth. And not.
Fun fact, I saw that movie for the first time when I was 8 years old, and I realized I was heterosexual because of that.
All right, fair enough.
It was very aroused.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right.
I mean, I realized that I might not be heterosexual.
That movie
Okey-dokey.
Is so great.
So then I guess we're on to my last one. Your here last is one. We're a little over the hour mark, and I'm just gonna, you know,
you have to do it.
Yeah,
do it,
right? Just have to. Lord of the Rings.
Thank you.
Lord of the Rings. You know, for those who are not watching, I've got the box set here. Lord of the Rings is not only one of the most successful trilogies of all time, winning what 22, 24 awards, something Academy
it
Awards.
It dominated first, the box office. It dominated Oscars and Golden
first
Globes.
First fantasy Oscar winner.
Absolutely.
The three incredible. Movies grossed over $1 billion without having, you know, a superhero behind it. And the practical effects were fantastic. The cast was fantastic. I mean, it's.
The first production company, the first studio that got it, told Peter Jackson he had to make it one film.
Which is all hilarious.
Stupid.
I mean,
considering there's three books.
Because there's three books that each one could probably be two movies
easily. Right, because like Harry Potter, so much was left out.
So much. And so
a lot. Like almost half of...
Tom Bombadil.
Yeah, Tom Bombadil.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
How many other franchises can you think of where you're willing to sit through and watch what's essentially 12, 13 hours of content for three movies?
Yeah.
You know?
Not a lot.
And the Return of the King, almost half that book was left out. I mean, the end battles were so much larger.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many more nations in Middle Earth involved
and
there.
How amazing Lord of the Rings is. It's equally bad for The Hobbit.
Well, I'm not talking about The Hobbit. I'm talking about the Lord of the Rings.
If Del Toro had been able to do The Hobbit, do you think it would have been any better?
I think...
Not if it still had to be three books, or three movies, excuse me.
It was stretched. They included some stuff from the Cimmerillion in there.
Because you
which
had to.
Was interesting.
They created a whole new character, and I mean, because look, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is three massively detailed novels in three very long movies. The Hobbit is a children's book split into three long movies that had their own extended editions. You know, it's too much. It's too much for that. And they relied too much on CGI, not enough on the wonderful practical effects that made the Lord of the Rings trilogy still hold up and look pretty damn good today.
The only work that's like weird to go back is some of the green screen.
Some of the green screen stuff,
Do you know one of the reasons why they actually expanded it to include some of that stuff from the Silmarillion?
Money.
that, but also they were going to make other movies from the Silmarillion,
right?
And that idea was pulled.
Well, they weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
It's Hulkin Estate wouldn't let him do.
Exactly.
Which seems odd to me. I'm sure they have their reasons. I'm not saying that they were right or wrong. But
from the Silmarillion, you're going to have to take a lot of liberties to make that right. on screen. Because it was like an encyclopedia. Dry.
Yeah, it reads like a history
book. But
they took liberties in the Hobbit movies by creating an entire new character who didn't exist before.
Toriel was fine. I did not have an issue with Toriel.
I'm not saying that it was a bad decision. I'm saying it was a liberty. That character did not exist.
Well, Tolkien had issues against women. It's
so again, I'm not necessarily complaining. I'm just saying if the concern of the estate was the liberties that they would take, they were taking liberties.
Yes.
That's my point. You know, they were already doing that to adapt these things into movies because, look, when they were written, a movie like a movie is today didn't exist.
Correct.
And it wouldn't have been something that Tolkien could have even thought of.
No, now yeah, people like, write books and hoping they get movie deals.
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm sorry, brain fart. Elrond's daughter.
Arwen.
Arwen. Yes, Arwen. She did not save the hobbits
in
the movie. It was Glorfindel, who only made a cameo in the movies.
There you go.
Glorfindel was a major player.
So, I mean, they were already taking liberties. But anyway, the point is...
But it was good. It was good. They were amazing movies.
Massively successful. I mean, the Academy, the Oscars, for really the first time legitimized fantasy films by giving out so many frickin' awards to these movies. I think it was 22 or 24 Academy Awards the trilogy won.
Well-deserved. Those actors bled for their craft. Viggo Mortensen was in the hospital over and over again with, you know, broken ribs and chipped teeth. So... That man bled for his craft, and they deserve all the accolades for it. They're great films.
Oh, yeah.
So there you have it. I think that's a good note to end on.
It was.
We've left out so much.
There's so many movies.
Time Bandits. Oh, Pan's Labyrinth.
I had all those on. Maleficent was actually a good movie.
Beauty and the Beast.
Ghostbusters, Big Trouble in Little China, Groundhog
Well,
Day.
Ghostbusters, I purposely left off because we talked about it with sci-fi.
That's why I have it.
So,
yeah,
the Jungle Book, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I was going to throw in, if we had some time, the at a minimum, the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
Not on the best list, sorry.
The first one is good.
It was nowhere near any of the movies we talked about.
Another Dick Van Dyke old school, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I mean...
So much fun.
There's so many good movies out there.
I wanted to put Legend on my list. I love Legend.
Legend's great. Mm-hmm. Tim Curry, man. So good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's it for us. If there's anything that we left off or didn't mention that you think should have made the list, please let us know. You can comment on the article. You can hit us up at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram or heroespodcast.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes at screen-heroes.com. We're also on Google Play, Blog Talk Radio. Find us, subscribe, drop us a review, all that kind of good stuff.
Give us money.
Give us money on our Patreon. Yes, we have to buy some new equipment, actually. We have to return our big mic here to its owner and buy a couple of new mics for us to use. So, you know, go to patreon.com/heroespodcast if you enjoy the show at all and drop us even a dollar helps. Everything helps.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to our top two contributors on Patreon, Jordan and Doc Rev. We appreciate it, guys. You guys have been supporting us for a long time. Jordan, well over a year. So thank you guys for that.
Check out Buster Props.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Check out the Star Trek dude.
Sure. Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
You're Ray of the Super Sirens.
I am.
And Robert.
I just went ahead and created a new cosplay page on Facebook called Casey Vigilante.
Follow that.
There you go. But we'll be back next week. I think we are, what are we doing next week?
We're talking about epic heroes again. Will Smith this time.
Big Willie. Fresh Prince. I'll have plenty to say about Will. So,
well, then Ryan and I can take the night off. We'll go play some video games.
No. Join us next week, guys. Don't forget you can join us live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/heroespodcast. And you can chat with us just like Jordan did tonight. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Take care.